Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
How often do we have a CS manager that's been, you know, a director of CS for 8 years and they just are in a silo? They've only been in one segment or one department and they're missing so much opportunity to learn a different perspective from the customer.
Jill, you were telling us also before the program that you recently had your leaders within your group rotate and take other roles, train in other roles temporarily to really get a sense of things.
Yeah. And it actually wasn't temporarily. It was a permanent move, but it was a pretty big risk. It could have blown up in my face potentially. So The learnings that each one of them has brought to one, each other bonding together because they've run each other's businesses and things that they wish the other team had been doing better. Well, this is their chance to live in those shoes.
The best CSMs are the ones that come from marketing or go to product or come from support. And to your point, they have this empathy that is driving them to work in those cross-functional teams. And I really love that you started this from a leadership standpoint.
Hello, everyone. This is Josh Schachter, your co-host of Unchurned, here again with John Johnson. John, say hi.
Hey, guys. Happy Monday. It's Monday, right?
Well, it's Monday for us, Wednesday for them. You should know that by now,
right,
John.
That's okay. That hurts. But yes, happy Monday, everybody.
I expect nothing more. Nothing more. So, John, on this Wednesday morning, where are you right now? It sounds like your reception's a little bit thrown off.
Yeah, I'm pulling a Josh Schachter, and I'm calling in for this episode. I'm on my way on 95 North up to Washington, D.C. to visit some incredible customers up to Amazon HQ2 to take out the AWS team to a fancy Cuban dinner this evening.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited. I was supposed to be there about an hour ago, but somebody decided to slam into the wall, and it's just car crash and traffic and whatnot. So I'm calling in.
Well, I'm hoping that this will lighten your day a little bit.
It's better than listening to a podcast. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Although I listened to an amazing one this weekend. We can maybe put it in the show notes. We probably won't actually put it in the show notes, but it was let's just be honest. But it's fun to say that. It's called Acquired, and it was about Costco and about the history of Costco and how they are just dominating retail.
They
sell 500 million chickens a year. That's the fun fact that I took away from it.
I want to listen to that podcast. Yeah. You know, I used to push carts at Costco in Kirkland, Washington, which is where Kirkland Signature comes from when I was in high school. Yeah.
And Kirkland Signature is the largest consumer package brand in the world and makes $55 billion in revenue every year.
CPG, baby. That's the future.
That note, we'd like to introduce everybody to Jill Sawatsky. Did I pronounce your name correctly, Jill?
You did, Josh. Yes.
Entirely, perfect. Or are you being
entirely
nice to me?
Okay. Entirely.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Jill is the CCO at Thought Industries. And Jill, I want you to tell us a little bit more about that in a moment. Jill's out of Raleigh, North Carolina. John?
Wait.
Of Raleigh. Yeah,
Jill.
Exactly. Your neighbor.
I am.
Oh, I'm in Briar Creek, so...
okay. Well, yeah.
Oh, is John in the fake Raleigh?
No, it's fine. No, but
I'm in downtown Raleigh.
That's awesome. We'll have to meet for coffee at the Optimist or something. It's
absolutely. It's a block from my house. So
that's amazing. That's so great. It's one of my favorite spots in town. So I did not know that. That was, now I know where you live. Not creepy.
Yep.
So let's roll with this. Let's just pretend you guys are at the Optimist and you're having coffee or introducing each other. Mm-hmm. You know, John has bought you, Jill, a nice macchiato with oat milk and a banana walnut muffin.
And I'm there with my dogs.
And you're there with the dogs. Yep.
Well,
The
questions that I want to know, because you're kind of getting it normally. I don't know if you, my first thing that I always ask is, did you know what you were getting into when you said yes to this podcast? But number two, I would want to ask you if you heard the news about the recent merger of two customer success platform tools, Tatango and Catalyst.
I did not hear that. That's actually news to me, but that's exciting. And that, I've been a longtime user of Gainsight. Mm-hmm. I have used Tango.
Oh, I love
before,
spending money too.
But, but, you know, we're always open to exploring opportunities and new tools. And in fact, as our business has evolved and as, you know, tightening budgets like everyone is doing in software, we are very much looking closely at our spend for sure. And as well as, you know, as AI is transforming the whole space in general, looking to where we want to go next based on that.
I just want, just a quick time out here, Jill, that's very fascinating. John, like if you were sitting down with Jill at the Optimist for coffee, would you really be like, "Hey Jill, great to meet you. I love your dogs." And, you know, did you hear about two weeks ago, did you hear there was a merger of two like middle of the pack CSPs 2 weeks ago? Would that be how you would start your conversation with Jill? Like, come on.
That's literally how I start every conversation.
That's how you start. I mean, because Jill did a really great job at responding to it. She's like, I don't fucking care. But she went with it anyways. Like, she really flowed with it well for you. But I think you owe her a better follow-up.
Man, I'm just here for a good time, not a long time, Josh. Yeah. That's my goal. No,
I'm being really mean and vicious.
No, but Jill, this is one of the things that we notice when Christy isn't here to keep us apart, is Josh just kind of attacks me, which is great. It's fine.
I attack. Because Christy protects.
She's the mediator.
Yeah, but the reason that I say that is because I also, if I were sitting at a coffee shop with a CCO, somebody that a role that I would like to inhabit at one point, I am going to be looking for ways that it will benefit my career in the long run. So, but number one, how do you like Raleigh? Like, are you from Raleigh? Is that where you were originally from, or are you a transplant like me?
I'm a transplant. I'm from the DC area, up where you're driving right now.
Okay.
I grew up there in Virginia, Northern Virginia, and went to the University of Virginia, but I've been in Raleigh since 97. So,
oh, so you've seen the boom
here as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going on 2 years, and I came from just south of Santa Barbara, California. So I'm one of those Californians that moved into your area.
And driving all the house prices up.
I haven't bought a house yet, so I haven't been that one yet. So I'm working on that right now.
Jill, you were mentioning basically you were getting into the whole do more with less. I don't think you called it that, but that's what we all know it as. That unfortunately is a platitude these days, but a accurate platitude. So, like, tell us a little bit about how that is manifesting for you in your role as CCO. Maybe you could start out giving us a little bit. Well, first off, I said that I would ask you, and I didn't. But tell us a little bit about Thought Industries. What do you guys do?
Thought Industries is an education platform for customers to educate their customers and also to be an external learning management system. So not internal LMS, but really external facing. And focused on helping customers with their own retention and customer engagement and driving product adoption or professional training, you know, running their business on our platform. So one of the things I really love about it as CCO is our customers are trying to do the same things that I'm trying to do. They're trying to retain their customers, drive adoption, et cetera. So it becomes very, very meta and very fascinating, interesting conversations.
Now, the challenge with that is that what's also happening to your customers is their belt is being tightened in the CS function, just as yours is. How
yes.
has that been playing out, and what have you been doing to counter it?
2023 was not the easiest year, like for sure. as for many software companies, I'll say that. There's definite pressure that our customers are feeling to combine their education systems if they've got, you know, multiple, if they want them all. as few systems as possible. They're looking to see ways that they can, you know, reduce their spend for sure. the way that we have shifted things in TI is we actually had this big phrase of, you said, you know, do more with less. Ours is do less, better together. And what that initiative is all about is really doubling down and focusing on a larger number of product enhancements specifically aimed at our customer base. So a little bit less on the, like, what's the really cool, hot new thing we can do. Of course, we have some of that for sure. But what are the things that have been the most key pain points for our customers that we can address that are really going to help them achieve more? So how can we improve our e-commerce, or, you know, improve usability aspects so that they can get more done quickly? And the team
that sounds really, like a very cross-functional. Really, that's a very cross-functional initiative. Right? That's not you unilaterally. That's between you and the chief product officer and head of sales. And
I'm the co-sponsor along with our chief product officer of doing this.
And then on the other end of the corner, and the other end of the boxing ring, is your CRO. Is that asking for new features to sell more accounts?
Yes. But they can't do upsells unless we're retaining the customers in the first place. So, you know, everything else kind of depends upon that, and getting great references too. So they certainly have a stake in the game in doing this.
Okay. So there's the product angle. So you're focusing on doing less new. The product roadmap is focused on what customers, existing customers want, and what we know is going to improve their experience and their propensity to retain. Be retained, not churn. How are you capturing that information from your customers and handing that off to your product team?
We have a community, and we have feedback within the community. So we get lots of suggestions and upvotes on the things in the community. But it also, of course, comes in through our customer success team and the things that they're hearing day to day from customers. And we track that and submit actually requests into our product team that come through the CSM. So we sort of have like two paths for the customers to get their asks in.
I want to just get tactical, because folks that listen to this program, they're like, oh, you know, what exactly are leaders in the space doing, right? So so you've got the community forums and community user generated content, if you will. And then you have hearing from the CSMs directly and their input into the product team. Do you align yourself and your co-sponsor? Do you align in recurring meetings on, like, going through a list of what you're hearing? Or does it, you know, are you writing tickets straight into Jira or Notion? How exactly does it work?
Well, there's the big, you know, product epics, and customer success is a key part of, we have review sessions of, here's what's going to be in the next quarter tentatively. And we are part of those meetings and planning sessions for the next quarter and the quarter after. So we get a vote and discussion in those. And so those are the big product enhancements. But then we also have a team we call our outcomes team. And our outcomes team is where smaller development items come in from customers, and we open up tickets that first get analyzed if there's some sort of workaround we can do. If not, if it's going to need a code change, then they go into the outcomes team. And we have a pretty rigorous prioritization process to determine which ones we work in what order. And we have a weekly meeting where we go over those, and someone, you know, can at that meeting talk about why they might need something bumped ahead of the prioritization process because of, you know, whatever is happening with that customer.
So you have kind of two swim lanes. You've got your big rocks, your epics, and you're coordinating on that. And then you have your, I'm about to turn 40. And so I had a little senior moment there, your outcomes team, which is more of your daily types of fixes and smaller tweaks and refinements.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. Product, you're focused on product and alignment with your department there. What other ways are you doing less but better for everyone? I don't think I got that exactly right, but what was
do less, better together.
Yes.
We're also leaning more into digital customer success, like, you know, many other customer success organizations as well. So how can we help out more of our customers in a more efficient way? So we've increased our office hours to customers to 5 days a week. We were doing them one day a week. So now any day they can go and get on with technical experts and consultants and get questions answered.
And how does that work? There's like a standing Zoom line, or what's the mechanism for that?
Yeah, they can submit questions ahead of time, or they can submit them at the meetings. But yeah, it's a standard meeting that's listed on our community. They can get the Zoom link and call in whenever they need to. So it's a, you know, a substitute for, not meant to be support so much, but more consulting type of questions, and customers even answer each other's questions as well.
So it's high touch, but it's one to many, as opposed to being high touch and one to one.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Anything else that you're doing as far as digital success or you know, what you're looking into?
You know, more of the kinds of things like proactively doing webinars on the most important topics and getting yep. information out to our customers sooner. Since I run customer education as well, like figuring out ways to really optimize getting that knowledge to customers so that they don't even have to open the support ticket in the first place.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask a question on that too. I really love the idea. Obviously, you want to do what you do well, right? How are you identifying, I guess, let me frame this a little bit. How are you identifying what you take off of potentially CSM so that you can focus on doing the best of what you can do, right? So you've talked about digital, you've talked even just this outcomes, you know, kind of mm-hmm. model when it comes to product roadmaps. How are you identifying what to remove from the CSM's plate or your education's plate so that you can kind of refocus? And what does that process look like for refinement?
It does all relate to that outcomes process. And we've added a technical investigations team. What we found, and it's taken a while to evolve to this, it sounds simple, but it wasn't that simple to put in place in reality. So we found that customers were putting support questions onto CSMs, and that's not the right place. And we have to push them back to the support team. But there also were sort of gray areas that aren't really exactly support questions, more consultative things, but the CSMs don't always know the answers to those questions. And then where do those things fall? Is it a professional services engagement? Is it, you know, a paid engagement, a free engagement? Do we bring someone in? And so we've really built a means for CSMs to, if they don't know how to answer something, it goes to the technical investigations team, which is actually part of our support team. And they will do the analysis of, can I just answer this for the customer? Do I need to get on the phone with the customer? Do I need to open a support ticket? Do I need to open an outcomes Jira ticket so that a developer will look at this and do a code change or an enhancement, or it's a problem ticket. And having that different path beyond just the usual straight support tickets has been really, really helpful for customers not to get stuck in sort of the black hole in spaces.
That's like everybody, like that's the hardest part of any independent CSM is when it has to go to support and then they're still in the middle of it. I really love this model.
Yeah, it's working extremely well, and it gives relief to our CSMs who are really frustrated when they don't know the answer to something, they don't know where to find it, and they were spending so much time trying to pursue the answer, and now they have a way to get those things handled quickly for the customer. And it's still their job to make sure that something's communicated back to the customer and sure. that things keep moving along the way. But that way, then they earn the right to have the conversation about their success plan and the objectives and how we're really doing to drive value for them, which is, of course, where you want them spending the time.
Yeah. Last question when it comes to kind of this model, are your CSMs, are they dedicated named accounts, or are you in more of a pooled or hybrid model right now?
They were entirely dedicated, and we are just in the process of transitioning to more digital. So part of our customer base is now going to be in a pool model. So that's what we're in the process of building out.
And what's the structure? Like, what's the count of the folks in your team? We never really kind of got to that. Like, what does your organization look like?
So I own our customer experience organization, which is all the post-sales functions, from professional services to customer success, support, and customer education. And specifically, you know, I have a VP of each of these organizations. And then specifically within customer success, we've got, I think, 8 CSMs now who are awesome. High touch, dedicated CSMs, but, you know, also answering that the pooled piece for our lower ACV customers.
So you're doing less, better everywhere. I know I didn't get it right. We're just going to go with it.
Doing less, better together.
Thank you, John. Thank you. And John, you're older than me. What's going on with Gibbs?
I take fish oil.
The ginkgo biloba. The brain. Fish oil.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
It's not true.
With that, if you're able to do that together, what would be, if you could, like, art of the possible, what would you have, what would you love your CSM or anybody within the units on your team, what would you love for them to be spending their extra time on?
I would love for them to be able to really consult and be strategic and look at how our customers are driving that engagement, driving adoption with their customers, and really make recommendations of, hey, I've got this other customer that's doing something, you know, really cool. They're doing certifications for theirs, and it's driven their adoption through the roof. Have you thought about trying that? Or, you know, having the conversations that truly add that extra level of value that, you know, beyond, we can get AI to do the just basic problem solving pieces. Of course, you have to get through those. They have to be solved, but the really, really helping drive it to next level where customers want to stay with us because we're not just a customer education platform, but we truly are helping guide them along, like, what good looks like, and are willing to be that partner leader. With them. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, thought exactly. Leader, thought partner. Awesome. Okay, I want to leave the better together, and I want to go into the next chapter, as it were, of our episode. And John, you're in the car right now. You're somewhere on the Beltway, right? That's not what they call it.
I think so.
Yeah, Jill would know. It's the Beltway, right? In that area, the DMV.
If you're up at Baltimore, you're probably past the Beltway.
Okay. Well,
I'm on asphalt. That's all I got for you.
Okay.
I don't. Is that a euphemism, John? I don't. Okay. So, John, you're on your way to meet a customer, and
yes.
Jill was saying before we press the red button on this program to record that she is all in-person interactions with customers.
Yeah.
So Jill, I want to hear more about that vigor you have to the meeting customers in person. What was it like before? When did you see an inflection point? And then let's talk about kind of where things are now.
Well, I've done this for years. I started out in customer success in IBM in 2011, I think it was. So I've been doing this for quite a while and did onsites with customers really right from the beginning. And, there's just no substitute for meeting with a customer and having them tell you about proudly about the purpose of their business and why your product is so crucial to their career. And I mean, I've been to wildly different places, from Starbucks headquarters to Nike to, you know, a small customer who's providing education on to kids on STEM and making sure that they're performing better in school. So, like, but yet for each one of those customers who's running that program, if they are not successful with our platform, they could potentially get fired or not be successful or promoted. And so seeing that passion and what they're doing, there's just absolutely no substitute for it. And it's gotten a little bit harder with COVID and post-COVID now. Customers are starting to come back on site, but sometimes they're like, oh, we're all distributed. But if you can get them to come together for a one-time meeting to have that discussion and have them show you what they're doing, you don't have to meet in together on site after that, but you've got to have like that first kickoff meeting in person.
No, I love that. This has actually been a big focus of us. So with user testing as well, we've kind of been given the green light to spend as much time that we can with customers. And to your point, it's been very difficult because most of our customers are distributed, right? So I'm on my way up to the HQ2 for Amazon. And one of the benefits that I found and with these working sessions has been, you may not be able to get together on a Monday or Tuesday, but if they're planning these working sessions already where they do bring everybody together, there's a really great opportunity for you as a vendor to come in and support them in these moments. And you get that co-creation, which is one of my favorite parts of this whole thing, right? Is getting in front of people and not just like, hey, I'm going to buy you dinner or I'm going to give you a presentation or anything like that, but actually building something. At your level, what are the levels, what are the types of conversations that you're having? What are the titles of the customers that you're meeting? Are you staying at the executive level or are you getting in the weeds with ICs and some practitioners?
Generally, it's a mix because since we don't get together all that often with customers, it's usually some sort of, all day meeting where we're going to delve into the details and we're going to meet their whole entire team. And then, I'll have separate conversations with the executive sponsor, separately as a part of that. We'll talk at dinner and potentially sit next to each other and talk about where things are going. But really, I want to make sure that the customer executive is seeing what our team can do. And to your point, like if you can do on site, like some real deep into the product configuration and show them live, like, wow, it's easy to use our product. Here's something that you can quickly produce. Like that goes a long way with the executive rather than just talking at the 30,000 foot level about what they're trying to do. And then you've built their trust and then they'll really share with you of where they're trying to drive the business strategically.
Yeah, I love that.
I've never attended an on-site customer success meeting. I'm a child of COVID when it comes to CS. I'm a COVID baby in customer success. So I'm like trying to visualize it and it sounds amazing. But I've never actually seen it taking place.
That's like the last, since you've met me, Josh, that is pretty much all that I've done. It's flying across this country with my solution consultants, getting on site. It's some of my favorite things.
But isn't it expensive, John?
And building. It's expensive.
Isn't it expensive?
But I mean, once you get into the enterprise and global business, I mean, Jill, when it comes to like, we don't need to go into specifics about contract value, but if a company's spending $500,000 to $1 million, like that's like an invitation for you to give that bespoke model where most of what we're doing is digital. Like 80% of the problems that we're solving is coming from bots and support tickets and all these things. And you can really make a heavy, heavy impact by budgeting $10,000 to $15,000 a year to go on site with your customer. And it's not even the dinner or the wine or whatever it is. That's the relationship building, but it really is getting everybody in the room to get on the same page. And that's the hardest thing with this digital world that we live in right now, because everybody's calling in from a different time zone and a different living room or co-working space. And it's so hard to have a unifying moment that we used to have in the offices. And these on-sites are so powerful when you can actually find that aha moment together and then send them on their way home. And it's absolutely worth the expense. Of course, within reason and with responsible budgeting, of course.
Yeah,
have a troubled project or customer situation, it's the best way to turn it around.
Yep.
is to get in a room and really understand what's causing the differences, you know, where are the communications missing each other.
Yeah. And but I think go ahead, Jill.
Oh, so you can do it on Zoom too. It's just, you know, you have to really build the personal connection on Zoom as you're doing it, which is definitely harder to do, and make sure that you're consistently remembering, like, they have a dog or a, you know, whatever they're interested in, or they're interested in cycling, or finding that shared connection. But it's so much easier in person.
Yeah. Well, and to your point too, I think when we are only digital boxes on a Zoom meeting or a podcast recording, it's really easy to forget that I'm a human talking to another human. And there's value drivers that are outside of this little digital box. And it's really easy to say no over Zoom. No, I don't need to buy that, or I don't need to implement that again. But when you're sitting across from somebody in an office or at a table or at a dinner, to really like see the value and the problems, to your point, even for like a challenging relationship, it's a lot easier to really dig into what those core reasons are, whether it's mistrust or if it really is pricing, which it hardly ever is. But like getting in front of somebody and having them actually say no to your face is a lot harder than just closing your laptop and moving on to your next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Absolutely.
I just took a wrong turn and I got lost. And this is so funny because I'm trying to map quest my way back to the freeway while having this really cool conversation. So this is multitasking.
Well, one last trick for you when you do on sites is, if you can, bring someone with you from another organization that is not necessarily customer facing.
Yeah.
Because for, you know, an engineer or a product person or even marketing, for them to get to hear the customer story and why it matters to them, I mean, there's just no substitute, and they can't hide behind, oh, well, you know, I see the customer's having a problem, but it's 5 o'clock on Friday. Gotta go. Like,
yep. I love that. That's great. That's great advice.
Joe, you were telling us also before the program that you recently had your leaders within your group rotate and take other roles, train in other roles temporarily to really get a sense of things. Tell us a little bit about that program and what the goals were of that initiative.
Yeah. And it actually wasn't temporarily. It was a permanent move. So this was a pretty...
Oh, so you foisted your low performers off in other groups within the organization? No, is that what I'm hearing?
All within my own organization. So I did not. But it was a pretty big risk. It could have blown up in my face potentially. And, you know, Thought Industries it's not a huge company. This might be harder if you were in a IBM or Microsoft somewhere, for sure. But within Thought Industries, it's worked really well. And what I did was I took the person running professional services and moved her. She is now the VP of customer success. And our head of support, I moved him. He had been in PS at one time. So I moved him to professional services, and I moved our pre-sales leader to lead professional services. And then the best one that I did was our leader of customer education, moved him to lead our support team. So The learnings that each one of them has brought to one, each other bonding together because they've run each other's businesses. They know, they have complete empathy. They know the team members of the other teams. And they bring the skills that they learned on those other teams and things that they wish the other team had been doing better. Well, this is their chance to live in those shoes and drive it.
It sounds like recreational, like gym class volleyball. Right? Like the coach blows the whistle and okay, rotate. Now, so the question I have is who was left out, you know, but no, that's, no one was left out. Nobody left behind. I love that. I've never heard of anybody doing that. It sounds very reasonable, very logical, very wise, but I got to imagine it's one of those things where like every executive leader would love to do that. And yet they never actually do. It takes a lot of gall and a lot of bravery to actually pull the plug on that, pull the trigger.
Yeah, I mean, I had to have some real heart-to-heart conversations with each of my leaders and realized that like the whole thing hinged on, on each one of them agreeing to it separately. I wasn't going to force anyone to do it. I really needed their buy-in. So, you know, a real, where do you want to go with your career? How it would be so helpful to your resume to have tried other areas. Look at how, you know, marketable you'll be in the future, having spent time in services or spent time in customer success and support. And, you know, amazingly, they all bought into it. And some of it may be the culture at Thought Industries where everyone really truly pitches in to help each other. But I think they also each saw it as an opportunity. And the one I wanted to mention that was really useful is having a support leader who also does customer education, because he has great incentive to deflect tickets to the team by making sure that, you know, our documentation is all up to date. When, as he hears problems coming in through support, like how else can we address this? Where can we else can we manage this and do things better and like quickly get those updates in? There's no disconnect there. Like they're all one team. And in fact, he's the one who built that technical investigations team. And so he took, you know, some really strong technical people on the team to build that model where they can be really the heart of TI and where things get distributed and happen. And because he manages those multiple functions there. So that one paid dividends in ways I never even foresaw coming.
Oh, but give yourself some credit. This is part of your vision.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in that too. Because, I mean, as you like what you just said, I think a lot of times in customer success, we become so insular where it's like, I have to be a CSM or I have to be a senior CSM. But the best CSMs are the ones that come from marketing or go to product or come from support. And to your point, they have this empathy that is driving them to work in those cross-functional teams. And I really love that you started this from a leadership standpoint to say, you guys are all running these organizations. All of these people, most of these people are customer facing. And now you're going to have a little pivot into what it looks like in the future. How often do we have a CS manager that's been, you know, a director of CS for 8 years and they just are in a silo? They've only been in one segment or one department and they're missing so much opportunity to learn a different perspective from the customer. I'm really excited to hear how this goes, you know, as you kind of mature this process. But I want to commend you on that because there's a lot of wisdom in kind of trading places. And like you said, calling switch and letting the center take the spike position, whatever analogy you want to use. I never played volleyball, so I don't know.
And we've had quite a few team members who have really taken advantage of this too and moved to different roles within CX and outside of CX, but particularly within CX. So we've got people in support who were in services and, you know, vice versa. And one thing that's very helpful, especially when running a services business where you've got a P&L that you've got to work on and you have to manage those ups and downs. So if we have a peak in services, well, we can pull team members in from other teams. Or if we have a huge spike in support or someone's out sick, we can pull people across from services to help with it because many of them know each other's business and really understand how to do multiple roles, which is, you know, extremely useful to be able to handle those peaks and valleys.
That's incredible. I didn't even think about that process. I was just talking to another CSM about how she wishes she could lean on her support agents because they're understaffed on CS folks, you know, just to handle some of these other tasks that they're doing. And this is a brilliant way to have some of that cross training that is just natural to kind of tag people in without it really becoming a burnout process, which is what's happening right now as we're doing this do more with less model that sucks kind of most of the time. So that's awesome. It's great.
It keeps it interesting for everybody as well. Something fresh.
Yeah.
How long have you been running this, Jill?
Started it last fall.
Okay.
So call it 6 November, months. November-ish almost.
A little bit less. And yeah. You said it's permanent. You said it's not temporary, but is it permanent? Like, what do they know the time horizon that they signed up for?
There's no end time horizon. I mean, other than, you know, the only thing certain and.
Well, how many leaders have come back to you begging at your door saying, let me back in my old role?
Not one.
Not one.
I mean, you might have to ask them directly, but at least what they tell me is that they're really excited. And they said, one of them said, I didn't even realize how burnt out I was until I took this on. And now I'm just totally newly invigorated and excited about the changes that I can make.
And will they rotate again?
There's no plan for it, but you know, anything's possible. If things get stale again, or we need to really implement things in a different way, I could absolutely see that happening. And, you know, with the transformation that's happening across customer success and customer education, I could see that being something that could be needed again in, you know, another year or two.
Is there any way, Josh, what?
Go for it, Josh. Was it Josh?
Josh.
Oh.
Well, you know, my nickname was Oshkosh Josh. So, yeah. I don't know. Jill, speaking of the future, you said 1-2 years from now, like if you're looking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, do you think that there's a world in which those roles are all married together into the customer team?
I think it's possible. You guys are in Josh, you're in the business of AI and understanding the transformation that's going to drive. It's hard to foresee all the ways that it will change the business. But if you think about, say, training, customer education, it's probably going to wildly change the industry and how jobs work there and roles work. And the same thing with customer success, it's really going to morph that. So I could see having people who are more flexible and could handle multiple different roles and just have those high level kind of consultative strategic skills where they're really adding value because AI is taking care of kind of the more basic problems and solving those.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree very much so. My last question on this is how much ramp up time did you think it would take and how much did it actually take? I assume, did you do this all at once? Did everybody just kind of like in volleyball, did everybody just shift at the same time? And
musical chairs.
A lot? Yeah. Like, was this you started this during the holiday season when it was slower? How did it actually play out?
Yeah. Started it, early before Thanksgiving and really had to carefully plan out. The communication plan was the biggest piece of it. I moved all three at the same time and we had to kind of plan out how we could do that transition because none of them could just leave their current role. So they almost were in like a half and half state for a number of weeks.
Right.
And then we had to communicate it to the teams in the right way so that they didn't feel like they had been left behind, but rather that they had more support rather than less support. And then there is a period of time where you kind of lose, not as productive as we were before. I'd say there was sort of a month in there where everyone was just in flux and trying to figure out what they wanted to do and driving strategy. The timing actually worked out well because they had the holidays to kind of think about things and then roll into our sales kickoff at the end of January. So everything had to be like really nailed with plans and what each department was doing for the sales kickoff. So it was great to have that deadline that like we had to get there and move forward. And now it's executing on our 2024 plans from here.
And was this inspired by any other organization that you had seen done this before? I guess what I'm trying to understand is it seems like such a great move, but also kind of higher stakes. It's something that you could kind of like live or die on by, right? If it works, then amazing, you're a genius. If it doesn't work, you're the CCO and you've just intentionally muddied everything up across the entire, you know, groups within your org. So, was this one of those things, like where did this come from? What was the impetus and the driving force to do this?
Well, really the challenges of 2023 and you know, customers all having the pressure to downsell or, you know, buy less. And so with that, like, I needed to make some sort of serious change. You can't just like keep doing the same thing and hope for better results, right?
Yep. So, yep. That's what they say the definition of insanity is, don't they?
Exactly. So it seemed like, it seemed like for 2024, we really needed a new approach.
Love it. I love it. Jill, we'll leave it at that for right now. Thank you. This has been such an enriching conversation. Your thoughts on in-person meetings and on this rotation system that you have going. Thank you so much for spending the time being here with us today. John, it seems like you may have parked. So I'm glad you made your destination and I hope you crush it.
No, I just made it to the Capitol. So I have almost arrived at my destination. But I'm so thankful, Jill. And I'm gonna message you when I'm back in Raleigh. I'd love to have that conversation at the Optimist.
Yeah. Let me know. We'll walk right down the street.
Make sure you started off on the right track, John.
Talking about mergers and acquisitions.
Tell us about that merger. Tell us about that acquisition that nobody cares about. All right, Jill, thank you so much. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Josh. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Thanks, everybody.